Welcome to the podcast for Boomer Women, where we embrace the journey. I'm your host, Agnes Knowles. I so enjoyed my chat with Susan today. She had a professional career. She's made changes midlife. She experienced career issues thanks to COVID. And she embraced a type of journaling many of us haven't heard about, even thought about. And on that note, click pause and go get a piece of paper, a crayon, a colored pencil, anything you've got lying around. And it's okay, your grandchildren won't notice one crayon missing. And then doodle as we talk. It really can be therapeutic. We're at midlife, which usually brings with it several sorts of change. It can be stressful. It can be unexpected. It can be a little unnerving, even if it's something you want and planned for. Shall I call this therapy in a podcast? Listen now. To say this time of life is a time of change might be an understatement. Perhaps you've made the leap from 9 to 5. Perhaps you're considering it. Perhaps you're planning your next adventure. Whatever stage you're at in midlife, things rarely stay the same for long periods. My guest today helps with transitions, and she brings a unique angle, using art journaling as a tool to navigate life's changes, rediscover joy, and silence that inner critic. We don't have any of those, I'm sure. I know there's a bunch of you who are thinking, art? Creativity? I don't have a single creative bone in my body. See how well I know you all? I used to say the same thing, but in the last decade, I've proven myself wrong time and time again. Susan says, through its playful, childlike nature, I was able to reconnect with the joy and curiosity that often gets buried beneath adulthood's complexities. I realized art journaling wasn't just a fun distraction, but a way to process emotions and make sense of life's chaos. Sounds more fun than meds to me. And perhaps I have your attention now. Susan Hensley, welcome to the Boomer Woman's Podcast.
Oh, thank you so much for having me. I love the intro because it it all resembles me and thoughts that go through my head and many of my clients, right? We're sort of all in this together. We're unique, but very the same.
Yeah. Well, and if you're, we're just talking about your website, you're like your website, it's going to be a lot of fun. So I appreciate it. Okay. Now, like so many others, your current journey was brought to life by the stress of the pandemic. Can you share what you were going through sort of at the beginning of 2020 and then as it finished and probably into the following years? Can you go through that for us, please?
Sure. There's a really clear story. It was February of 2020, and I went with some of my childhood friends to listen to a really great speaker. And afterwards we were talking, I said, you know, I'm really not ready to retire or to end this career. I really love it. And everything's working. And this is great. That was February.
What happened in March?
Right. By that July, I gave 18 months notice, but I recognized just in that intense period, a career, a profession, a company, right? I'd been there 23 years, loved the people that I had loved and felt was me back in February. I had shifted so much. And what's sort of the crucible of that time, I think, was the intensity of the work. I was a HR executive. So we were honestly working 24/7 because it was the company had a lot of manufacturing as well as a lot of others. So we had employees who had to go into the office and employees who didn't, large, complex business. So the work got very intense. I had some very vulnerable people in my life that I was very, very worried about. And the isolation. And I'd been art journaling about a year or two before. I had taken it up sort of just as a fun way to process. And boy, in the anxiety I was feeling, I was in this loop that really, it was a cycle between feeling really anxious and so scared and uncertain and angry. Then I would cycle between anxiety and anger. Like, why is this so hard? Why is this shifting? I want it back in control. I want things to be smooth. I want to know. And it was, as I was drawing, I was just playing with crayons and some collage. The art journal for me ended up being such a safe place to process all of those emotions and not to tell myself stories or try and think myself out of what was really a wave of worldwide emotions. People didn't know, and we were going through, and, you know, will you have enough toilet paper? Will you be able to get X food? What happens, right? If you think of just even how clearly those early days tapped into our survival need, you know, if anyone's familiar with like Maslow's hierarchy of needs, I mean, we were taken sort of globally down to, will we survive, when many of us would have liked to have been thinking about self-actualization. And and so as we're stripped down, I found the art journal to be so helpful in really helping me clarify. I wasn't going to quit because I had a large team and people were counting on me, but I made the decision that I could tell this no longer fit. I was starting to crave a life of more freedom, of more curiosity, less like rules and managing people to do, you know, what we want them to do, and really much more expression to live more freely as we all went remote. And it was interesting, although that was such an intense period. I had a lot of pains, body pains. I was getting this all checked out. I was like, you know, you become convinced your body's also talking to you, right? What you're doing doesn't fit. And yeah, it was just, it was to date one of the most intense periods of my life. And the art journal was, you know, really became a trusted friend and a savior. And then ironically, as I've moved on in these last few years and really now do life transition coaching, art journaling's part of helping people through transitions, right? And I used it inadvertently to help me through a transition. And now it's an interesting tool as I coach and work with other people in transitions to see what they come up with and how they experience it.
So I do want you to tell us exactly what art journaling is, but it sounds to me that because you could get so into it, it became almost like your Zen place.
Absolutely. Yeah. The really short answer for art journaling is, if you know what a written journal is, right, where you're just writing thoughts, same size, blank pages, and size doesn't really matter, but it's a place where you're playing with art. And crayons, you can collage, you can paint. I do it like 10 minutes a day. I am creating a masterpiece. This is not to show anyone, just like you wouldn't show anyone your diary or your own journal. Just like you can write messy and write in code and be yourself if you keep a journal. Granted, journal, this is for you, but you're using what the science shows is you're moving from like your left brain, which is very analytical and logical, and it's what most of us have built our lives on in many cases, really to the right brain, which we haven't used as much in, you know, our culture. And it taps into much more holistic sense, much more creative, resilient. And that's where I think the power really lies. So, I mean, I'm talking crayons. I'm talking what you loved as a kid. I really am, because inexpensive art materials are really a key to keeping it playful, right? Adults, very hard to take ourselves seriously holding a crayon. It just is. I've yet to meet an adult who's like, I'm going to master something with a crayon. But if you get a fancy thing, the minute you start to spend more money or you upgrade, you start to feel that perfectionism kick in a little bit. So I recommend really strongly through my classes, through my book, through any workshop, use the least expensive art supplies, shop the kids' aisle, steal from grandkids, kids, right? If you have any children in your life, use some of their supplies, do some art with them. It can be very, very liberating to just doodle what you loved to draw when you were 5 or 6.
Okay, is there any actual written word then, like, or the traditional journaling where you're writing down, your thoughts, your ideas, your whatever's gone on in your day? Is there actual writing in this, or is it just strictly all creative?
If you want. So I tend to always use some words sort of after, like I'll start, and there's lots of ways to approach it, but I many times will have a word or two, or I like collage, and sometimes I will cut out certain words. So you can write over it, you can write on it. Writing in crayon is really interesting. Like, write versus like taking your black ballpoint pen or typing a note in your thing where I am angry and so on. So you write rage in, purple letters with like little arrows or lightning bolts. So you still may be writing the same word, but if you're writing it with a crayon or, a paintbrush. So it's not that you're not using words. It's just not sort of that linear narrative in the same way. Many of my pages have words on it. So it is just as private as your written journal. So maybe, how you want to approach that. If it's lists, you can approach, but it's really about using some color because color speaks to us on a different level and it means different things to us. I think that's why when we go out in nature and we notice the colors, you notice something blooming, it sort of speaks to you very intuitively. So I think getting some color, playing with color is really cathartic and fun for people.
So, for those of us who are still a little anal retentive, shall we say, could we almost take that written journal and do what we want to do and then put the pen aside and just say, okay, I've got to start somewhere. Let's doodle our way through everything I've just written or something like that. Whereas if you've had a really tough day and as you say, you write rage in big purple letters and lightning bolts and maybe somebody with their hair standing on end,
Oh, I
that
love
sort
it.
of I never experience rage, no.
No, well, it's funny. I've done a little screaming face with the words like shame and anger. I like little emojis. We can all draw that little round face with the eyes and the scream. So, yeah, to your question, absolutely. I find, because I also, now that I have more time, I retired. I also keep a written journal. And what I do sometimes is I'll draw little pictures on the side, doodle. I have a bunch of like just colored pens. Sometimes we'll write one line in one color and another line in another color. And it's interesting ways you can incorporate color or imagery to help you really process a little more deeply what you're feeling, or to even sometimes challenge the story in your head. Like you may be writing about something, telling yourself, this is what happened, or this is what I need to do. But maybe you're writing it in pink or green. It just makes you think about, it's like, is that true? I suggest when people start, if they're at all curious, right? 5, 10 minutes a day, but you start with that really playful mindset. Like your first few days, it's like, I'm just going to play. I'm going to doodle, I'm going to scribble, and then I'm going to get curious and ask how I feel. Right? Do I feel light? And sometimes I write that on the page. I feel light. I feel relaxed. I feel like I want to do more. I feel silly, right? Whatever it is, it's about like play and curiosity, not about another should or to do. This is not, once again, it's all the process to help us be happier and calmer and help us through transitions.
You didn't lose my attention just then, but you talk with your hands and you had your pen in your hand. And I'm trying to look as it's moving around because you're talking with your hands, thinking, is that one of those pens with 10 different colors in
Oh
it?
no, this is just it's sort of a robin's egg blue. Sorry about that. I've got like an orange with a thicker tip
Okay.
because I now start writing on different things, but you're right. I get very excited and my hands are flying everywhere. And when I talk, I do have some just pens here. It's sort of funny to think about.
No, that's great. Now, you were talking about, like writing in different colors and creating pictures, and we're not talking Renoir here, we're talking Picasso.
Yeah.
Do you ever start creating, or do your clients ever start creating and realize that, and maybe this is exactly why you do this, but suddenly there's something you didn't expect appearing on the page. So you think you've, you know, I'm just a little tired, you know, I'm okay, you know, things are good. And then you realize that there's all this strange stuff coming out.
Yeah, I mean, more times than not, right? More times than not. And where it comes, you know, if we're talking about our life stage and your audience, there can be caregiving, there can be passings there. And we can go into what's going to happen mode or what am I going to do this? And I've seen clients draw like crying suns. Like they're telling themselves they need to be happy. They need to be optimistic. They need to be grateful. You know, I need. It's interesting. And then all of a sudden they're drawing a sun with like little tears coming down. And it's like, oh, I want to feel happy. I'm being told I should feel grateful or put the best face on this, but really I feel sad. I find that a lot as people can process whether it's caretaking or different diagnoses or and everyone processes differently. But why I love color and crayons or paints is so many of our emotions are several things at once. You know, just think of the phrase bittersweet. We all understand that, right? It's like, you know, something's happening. You're at a graduation, a wedding, a birth, but yet it's also changing that relationship, that life stage. I mean, retirement, it's thrilling to retire if you chose, right? And it wasn't that you got sort of retired, but, and it's terrifying, right? It's thrilling, terrifying at the same time. And sometimes when we're writing or even talking, we feel like it should be one or the other. And when you play with colors, you know, if you think of contrasting colors, complementary, colors go together. You don't, it's all the colors are okay. And so it's a really interesting, simple visual thing that I think we understand visually and intuitively, but in our everyday minds, it's like, I should be happy. Why do I feel so sad? Or I'm sad, but I also am feeling relief, or I'm feeling some freedom, right? That sort of what I call mixture of emotions. It's color's really nice. And so that's where sometimes the words emerge or symbols, right? Whether it's tears or sun, people sort of develop their own symbol codes, right? For one person I was working with, like a bunny was an image of childhood, which was soft and sweet and this, but then there were, you know, like monsters and other things. And it's just interesting how we choose to represent what we're feeling.
Well, and is it not true too? I mean, I know you're not a psychologist, I don't think.
No, but, I'm not.
You know, when the blues come, all these emotions have colors, don't they? You know, like it's okay to go there. You just don't want to stay there.
Well, that's exactly it during a transition, right? We want to keep regenerating, not stagnating. And the blues is a perfect description. I talk a lot about what colors mean, right? Okay. Blue can mean blue. It can also mean tranquil. It can mean wide open sky. And so depending on how we feel at that moment, that's what the color represents. And one of the things I've loved about keeping the journal now for as long as I have, it's really nice to sometimes flip back through the pages. It's similar to if you kept a written journal and you see how far you've come, it reminds you that emotions do come and go, right? Seasons of our life, periods do end. When they're tough, it's nice knowing they will end. And when they're really great, it also helps you savor and appreciate it, knowing that, you know, that too may pass. So no, I love your example of blue in that case and how it feels to draw that or represent what that might look like, whether you do it in a stick figure or face or with a nature collage, you know,
crying
what does
sunshine.
Blue feel like to you? Yes.
I had another question. That's okay. We'll move on.
Okay.
I know. I was going to ask you, do you date your journal as you go through?
What I do, because sometimes I'll work on a couple pages at a time, like something won't be quite finished, or I put a little too much glue. You know, when you're using really inexpensive things, you can get some soggy pages. So sometimes I'll go back. But yeah, I do. And I really am glad I do now, because I will reflect. And even if I can't remember that day, you can remember that period. Like, it's nice knowing that was February 2021. Versus, you know, something I may have done, although I have different books, it's, I like having the date, because it's sort of an ode. And I've seen this with clients, to our resilience, you know, to our story visually. It's fun having the date. Once again, people, this is yours. So if you don't like dates, but I always sort of write it in a bottom corner.
So you give art journaling a lot of credit for its healing powers. And I'm going to throw some of the words that you've used in your profile and on your website. And I think we've touched on some of them. Process emotions. So I think we've been talking about that in terms
for
of...
For sure.
Yeah, yeah. Now, making sense of life's chaos. Can you expand on that a little bit, please?
Yeah, absolutely. okay, this is a... You're going to think I'm crazy. So I ended up writing this book because I recognized, I was telling all of my coaching clients and, you know, people in the grocery store, I was a fan of what it could do, but I'm sharing one-on-one, and I had never wanted to write a book. I had a first career, right? I've had a few careers. This is like a third career. And I was a journalist in that first career. And I'd always said, I never want to write a book, because, right, there were lots of rules and different things back in the day. And I certainly couldn't envision writing such a personal book about my journey. And I actually put images from my art journal in the book, because I want people to see that this isn't about creating art, right? I mean, it really looks like a five-year-old did it. And I'm proud of that, in the sense of it's about processing. So when it comes to that wisdom, I wrote the book, but I was really struggling to tell anyone, believe it or not. And I was finding all these pictures. Every once in a while, I'll buy a couple magazines, or I'll get a travel documents, I find all these pictures of doors, shut doors. And I'm collaging all these pictures of doors. And I don't really know why, but I know I'm getting more and more anxious as the book release date's coming out. And I hadn't told family, I hadn't told friends, because I sort of was fearing, right, that critic. And then I start to find images. And this is what I call sort of the great synchronicities in life, of slightly open doors, and then an open door with a yellow lab sitting there. We as a family have always had a dog, and it's typically been a yellow lab. And it's like, walk through the door. And it, that's just one of the examples where, when I was finding the doors, I wasn't thinking, even though now I look back on it, it's like, that is so obvious. I don't need any awareness. It's like when I've done a lot with plants or drawn a lot of trees, and it's about growth. When you are sort of stuck, I'm telling myself a story of, I'm afraid to go on social media. I'm not a psychologist. So suppose someone says, oh, she's a life coach. You know, you're telling yourself these very frightening stories, but I'm not really paying attention to shut doors versus open doors. And then when I started to find the open door image, I recognized, I'm ready to walk through it. I've swirled around. This book is coming out. I've swirled around. I can deny, and I just, you know, let's be brave and walk through. And it's interesting how, working with clients, you get some of those other symbols and images of, like, fog lifting or a path becoming clear, where that symbol can really get us out of our head. It's like, yeah, just go forward. Or, you know, they start doing little drawings of superheroes or people, like, with their arms raised up like victory. It's just interesting how that internal, if you will, subconscious coaching and support really comes through.
I can see where, you know, because you think about some of those symbols, but you keep them in your head.
Right.
So what you're doing now is, which probably makes it even more apparent,
Right. It makes you laugh at yourself, quite honestly. You're like, yeah, look, when I was thinking about retiring, or I knew I was unhappy, all these winding paths and foggy paths, or people jumping off cliffs. It's like, well, you know, you get where that comes from. But instead of thinking it and staying in, like I said, I'm a huge fan. I mean, I had two relatively, honestly, successful careers because I was good at planning and organizing and using my left brain. So it's not like I'm not a fan of it, but I also recognized I can get stuck in certain loops. You can get stuck in, this is the way things have to be. And I think midlife is such an amazing time of creative reinvention. It's like a chance to explore things that we either chose not to explore earlier or didn't have the time and ability to explore. And I love using art or something creative to help tap into what might that be.
So you say to explore things that you didn't have time or whatever to do, but maybe explore things that you just thought would never be part of your life.
Absolutely. Yeah, no, you're absolutely right.
And with journaling, as you say, that's your book. You know, there's an elastic band around it.
Yes.
So if you go like, oh my God, it doesn't matter because nobody's going to see it.
Nobody's going to see it. He said, the day I drew that screaming face I told you about that was like rage and shame, I loved it because I knew no one would ever see it. And to me, it screamed off the page what I was so angry about. Ironically, it's one of the images I put in the book, and I sent it to some dear friends. It's like, is this overexposing myself? And what's so funny about it is they're like, no, because only I know what it was. I mean, right, it's a little screaming face. So it tells you, and it gets faded over time. I did this in watercolor and pen, you know, very inexpensive little watercolor sets. And what was like red and black and all these very dramatic colors fades over time. So it's like dusty pink and gray. And it's such a great symbol for the emotion. So I look back at that person, and I love it when my clients do this, because I think self compassion and recognize, I look back on that person who experienced it on that date, and I think, yeah, look at her. That was just one moment on one day, and I've moved through. It doesn't invalidate the emotion, the feeling, but it created a really safe container for it, right? It wasn't taking it out on someone else. It wasn't doing a less than great behavior for myself, scrolling, eating, you know, whatever things we do when we're not feeling great. We all have certain habits that are, I call them stagnating habits, right? It's a little more productive than that. It keeps us moving forward and feeling like we're taking care of ourselves. Like we're not stuffing down our emotions. We're not ignoring them. We're honoring them, but in a safe little container that's just ours.
Now, when you draw that face, whether it's screaming or laughing or whatever, does that face have long hair, bangs, dark
eyebrows? Oh, no. This is it's an emoji. This is how simple my art is.
Okay.
It is literally a round circle with a screaming mouth.
Okay. So you don't decorate the face.
I never tried to do my hair. There's no more. I mean, maybe it resembles me if I were just screaming with my hair pulled back. But no, it's...
Okay.
Now, some people may... you know, be really good at that. Now, I have stuck for me with stick figures and like, you know, round faces that are either smiling hearts. It's really interesting how many people, hearts speak to us, right? Heart's the symbol of love. It's what keeps our body alive, pumping blood. But it's been really interesting when I've done workshops and gotten feedback on my online course, how many people will default to hearts. Different colors, hearts, kinds of hearts, hearts that are breaking, missing pieces of hearts. It's a really, because it's a simple thing to draw, it's so embedded in our life and love and essence. That's been one of the most common symbols or you know, things that I've seen people draw, but they will be able to express a lot through through drawing of hearts, right? Stick figure can be stamping on a heart if they feel the brokenhearted or someone's mistreated them or off. It's interesting how much we can do with really simple drawings if we choose to.
You work with people now. Do you ever find that it's sort of interesting how, and I don't know if you see any of their artwork in quotations, but how differently two people can portray the same emotion?
Well, absolutely. So in workshops, lots of times people will choose to share. I tell them when we sort of spread out and do it that this is just for you. But people fall very in love with what they do. It's interesting because I talk about play, curiosity, and then being your own sort of proud parent. And when you're creating from that like 5-6-year-old inner artist, that you, who's the adult, does become really proud of it. And so it's interesting what people will draw and then they will choose to share. Now, many cases they'll represent an emotion very differently. Like, and a lot of it has to do with, say, how we view mountains. Some people may view a mountain as a hill to climb, something to get over, right? Others may choose that the mountain is a symbol of their strength, their growth. And so it's more if a person said, draw a challenge or draw something of your growth, that you may have people drawing mountains for totally different exercises because it's what, in essence, a mountain would represent to them. And so it's interesting that way. And in terms of you may, with an exercise, it's like, think about a time you were really upset and what's a symbol or way you would draw it. Think about a time you were joyfully happy and the same symbol, right? But two different people may be using the same sort of thing because it just represents something very different to them.
Loving this.
Okay, it's now fun to think about, isn't it?
Yeah. Now, in my intro, I mentioned silencing the inner critic. How do you do that with art?
So I have a few thoughts. It starts with like an opening exercise where you're trying to channel that inner child artist of really just sort of saying to the critic, whoever's like, this is silly, you're not good. It's like, this is my play date. I'm just playing. Like, just step aside. It's interesting. You see me doing that with my hand. I'll actually have people sometimes do that. They'll mirror that. It's like, no, not you. And when we sort of give that inner critic permission to hang out over here, don't make it wrong, but just like, don't need you. This is safe. That can be also really liberating and can feel very good to say, you know, you're just going to sit over here for a few minutes. Thank you very much. So that's one way we do it. The other way, and it's growing that muscle, is what I was just talking about, being like your own proud parent or proud teacher afterwards, like looking at what you created, being curious about, but then sort of thanking yourself. I mean, I will tell you, people smile. I love to watch their faces at the end of like a 3-minute exercise where they've been scribbling or doodling. They all smile at what they've created. It is a very rare person that's like, oh, this is terrible, because it's set up to be fun. And it's really that being your own proud parent's really important. It's like, if nothing else, thank yourself for doing it. Was it fun? Yeah. Did you like using whatever, blue and gold? You know, who knows? So that helps. That builds the muscle of silencing the inner critic because you get used to this being a place for play and expression where your inner critic isn't needed, right? It becomes a really safe place. And I find people, you have to practice it some because it is like building a muscle, but you can sort of train that inner critic that this is not about me getting better and better and perfecting. You can sit aside. I don't need you helping me right now. And that's, I think, where people do find it so liberating and creative.
Okay. So it sounds almost, I mean, the other two I've got here are healing and self-discovery. But yeah, it sounds like all of these are interwoven and, you know, one person will come and or will do this and, you know, do it maybe for one reason and find it's coming out like fixing three different things or something like that.
Well, exactly. And you're a different person each day, right? So if you're coming at it, some days it may just be play. Other days it may be a difficult emotion, right? We're in different places. There may be a prolonged period where you're really working through something. So I think it ends up being all of those things. But to your point, because a lot of what's happening is subconscious, we're not always aware of it. Like I said, it's when I go back that I laugh out loud at myself because some of the symbols are so obvious. Like I went through this plant phase when I was moving and trying to make new friends, right? It was like, I'm growing. I'm like the small, but at the time it's like, oh, these are just green and it's fun to draw, right? It's like, you would say, what are you doing? I'd say, well, it's just my play because you set it up. The beauty of setting it up as play is children don't go out to play with an agenda. They're not trying to like play better than they played the day before. Cause I'm not talking about a game. I'm talking about swings or something. Right. And so I think if we set this up as adults, giving ourselves that permission for 10 minutes a day to play, it makes space for healing, for self-discovery, because it gives you that, what I call that open field to see what emerges.
Well, it sounds too that you're just creating whatever that looks like.
Yeah.
It's also not that big problem of early childhood of staying inside the lines.
Yes, this is the opposite of staying inside the lines. It's what you wanted to do. And this is interesting in our socialization. It's the reward for coloring outside the lines. And what I love for people in midlife is what better time, right, to explore and be outside the lines. I think it's a period or can be of such freedom if we allow ourselves, because it can be very scary, right? We built a life going this way. And I think playing with art, playing outside the lines, can also make us brave to try new things, to explore, to maybe challenge, you know, what would someone think if I did this, if I took this lesson, if I went on this trip? It's a really nice way, this playing with art for a few minutes a day, to see what other areas we may want to be brave in or play in, because it's so low risk in making any change, right, or achieving anything. One of the best way the research has really shown is teeny steps, right? You don't go and reinvent everything overnight. It's like little steps in the playful art practice. It's like a little step for processing, for sort of getting in touch, for exploration. And I really have found it helpful for people in achieving bigger goals and bigger things, because it can break down anything they're feeling any given day. I mean, you can even draw pictures. You know, I want to move. You can draw pictures of the kind of topography or sunlight, you know, you want. If you're thinking of a move, you're thinking of more friends. It's interesting to represent what you want more of in your life, or even less of visually.
Now, I mentioned self-discovery because it's off your list. Our audience is mid-age. Yeah. If they're feeling sort of stuck, they know they want whatever they're in, they want that behind them. Can they art journal themselves into a place where they might see some possibilities so they get unstuck?
Yeah. You know, I did. And it takes time. I mean, I think if someone's really feeling stuck, there's a bunch of great transition coaches. It can be really helpful because there's tools, because transitions, if you're stuck, right, there's an ending and you need to really honor that ending and process the ending. And then there's this long, messy middle, which lasts longer than any human ever wants it to last and is like a swirly scribble, right? It's not linear. And once again, it's not our nature. We want to be at the new beginning, right? We know something needs to change, but we're maybe afraid or sad or, you know, every one of those, and everyone I know has ever gone through change at, you know, at this stage in life. Those are really just common feelings. And I love art journaling and, like I said, quite honestly, working with the coach, because what it can help you do is there's parts of all three of these stages, an ending, the messy middle, and the new beginning, that as humans, we may like some parts and not like other parts. And so we tend to overplay in the part we like and not really give the due to the part we don't. And that's where I think it's helpful to have some tools, whether it's our journaling, whether it's reflection, whether it's, you know, talking to a coach or working with them, to make sure you're honoring all three of those stages, right? Really working through what the end means, right? Whether there's grief or processing, a tying up loose ends and acknowledging, right? What it is, being really patient in that messy middle when you're like one step sideways, one forward, four back, two sideways, right? And finding the sort of fun, if you will, the game in that versus like, when will this end? When will I know I'm failing or I can't do this? It can be very easy at certain life stages to start to tell yourself, I can't, I'm too old, I can't. And that's just not true. And we need to, but it's hard. That's one of the scarier things. And that's where using your art journal to encourage you, working with someone to help break it down into small pieces. And then you get to that new beginning, which is great and exciting, but it raises its own set of questions. Suppose it doesn't work out. Suppose I don't like it, right? I finally have found my new thing. And it's figuring out how to work through both that excitement and scared. We were talking about dueling emotions. New beginnings typically have, like, I call them like skited, like excited and scared at the same time, right? It's like, oh, I found something I'm really excited, but I'm also now terrified. I was coaching a woman the other day who had her whole new profession. She was ready to go. She was a retired educator and new website. She had done all this training. She was ready and she could not launch it. It's like, I just need to go back. I can get my old teaching job back. Which is just really natural for some people, because she'd done all this work, was ready. It's like me not telling people I wrote the book. So whatever stage we're at in a sort of midlife transition, you can see that an art journal or working with someone can be really helpful, because some stages you'll cruise through and others will feel like they paralyze you.
Right. Now you were an HR exec. Do you ever get those high level, high achievers who take a look at your crayons and go, No, I will start with these beautiful, expensive pencils. That's the lowest I'll go. And they really have to be coached and coaxed, mm-hmm. to sort of get right down to that childlike level, you know, get out of that mindset of crayons are for kids.
Yeah. You know, I think it's one of these things. I try and honor where a person's coming from. What I would share with someone who went out and got fancy things is, if I was working, I may ask a few questions about, what does having something nice symbolize? Does it mean, do you have to be good, or are you pampering yourself and treating yourself as a child? Because some, it may have a different meaning. I think for most people, using something inexpensive that we used as a kid really gets rid of all the shoulds. And it's very, very helpful, and you have a low expectation. If there's, you know, I'm respectful that not every tool is needed in every situation. And if that's where the person's coming from, maybe something else is better for them, or they can try it. I had a dear friend buy me, she knew I'd been doing this for a while, and she bought me lovely, deep, rich watercolor set and beautiful art journal. And it wasn't until she got me the expensive, nice stuff, I didn't even pay for it. It was a thoughtful gift, that I actually had that aha, because when I went to do it, it felt wasteful. And I saw the deeper pigmentation that probably would not fade over time. And it's like, well, no, I can't slash away at this. I can't draw that little screaming face. I can't make a heart out of it. And I recognized that having something that like adults use to create art, or for, you know, great art, big A art, was really constricting for me. And so I shared the whole story with her. I actually wrote the story in my book, and I gave those supplies that were lovely. I donated them. And because I just recognized, because I'm not trying to get better, I'm using it for me, the fancy book with the beautiful paper. I could appreciate it as a lovely and thoughtful gift, but it actually way increased the voice of expectation and inner critic. And it took the joy out of it, right? There's something really fun. I love a glue stick. I don't have any listeners, but about holding that darn, like it's an Elmer's one to use, Elmer's glue stick and Krill. It's like just using those things as a kid. Someone was telling me, I was talking about that they loved paste. So they've actually gotten paste. Like I said, I liked glue sticks more, but you know, so they got themselves a little jar of paste, and it just keeps it more fun. And that's fun. Opens up our curiosity and creativity. So we want to do as many things as we can to be open, not closed. That's what the process is really about.
You just reminded me that I really want one of those funny little bottles of, like, they're brown glue, and they got that brown little top on the thing. You cut a slit in it. It's got the slope.
Yeah, it's the rubber, and you can make a ball. I know exactly what you're talking about. I can picture it perfectly.
Isn't that funny? Okay, you've referred to your book a couple of times. Its description seems tailor-made for our audience today. The book, Art for Your Sanity, offers readers a roadmap to rediscover the joy, resilience, and clarity often lost with age, inviting them to embrace their inner artist in the face of life's transitions. Tell us about your book.
Well, the book is, you know, we've been having a great conversation. The book is a much more linear distillation of the conversation, right? It talks through my journey. It has all of the latest science about why this is so effective for mental health, for relaxation, for creativity, for processing emotion. There, all of it has actual scientific reasons. So the book goes through that. It's got, you know, a basic how-to, a couple exercises, and then goes through, you know, what it is like to tap into that deeper inner wisdom. So it sort of takes you through that, as does, you know, I have an online training and a couple videos, because sometimes people just aren't sure where to start. And it's helpful to have someone sort of hold your hand, but then recognize it's really your journey. There aren't, what I love about it is there aren't hard, fast rules, because it needs to be your place for play.
I had a career in residential elder care. Mm-hmm. And if we got a group together and it was just going to be coloring day, their first reaction was like, you know, you would think I was asking them to paint a masterpiece, because like, I can't draw a picture. I'm just not any good at that. And, you know, so I'd start out with a few pictures, and sometimes I'd actually just go to, a mandala kind of thing.
Yeah,
that's just perfect. Shapes, yeah. Just shapes. Because then they didn't have to worry about what color is a person's skin, you know, that sort of thing.
Yeah.
They could just do random colors. And once they sort of let go of whether it's the inner critic or their history or whatever, yeah, it was one of the more popular things that we did. Yeah, it was really cool. One of your talking points is, can you explain the concept of working with duality using color in your book?
Yeah.
What does that mean?
So what it means, it's interesting, because I talked about just a moment ago in terms of new beginnings, where I said people are both excited and scared, right? And sometimes when we are two things at the same time, earlier I talked about bittersweet, this was excited and scared, we get sort of mad at ourselves. It's like, why am I shouldn't be scared. Like I should only be the good emotion. I should only be happy, not bittersweet. And with two colors, right, we recognize how colors contrast and can really complement each other in contrast. So as you play with color, I've found it really can help people accept there can be many emotions at the same time. Just like on a page, you can have many colors. We don't have to be just one. Like many times when we ask one, how are you doing? People just, you know, say great or I'm happy, I'm content. You get like one word. It's somewhat rare that people are like, you know, today I was anxious, happy, really mad, sort of excited. And the truth is you were probably all of those things at different points, fleeting and some more than others. Whereas when you're playing with color, it embraces all of that, right? You can feel if say yellow for you is sunny and optimistic and blue is also sort of sad, you can recognize that there may be moments you're feeling really optimistic. And then all of a sudden, if it feels like things are going too well, you get scared, right? So the color in that sense really, I think, embraces or helps us to accept that our language and the way we talk about emotions or share them tends to be a bit either or. Like, or we can get sort of down ourselves, like, why am I feeling this? I should be feeling X, but I should be feeling really happy and grateful. Instead, I'm sort of feeling, you know, tired and depressed, right? It depends on what it is. So that's where I love color, because it can encompass all those different emotions, whereas we don't really have the vocabulary, or, you know, I was joking with combining the word of like skited. That is not original. I heard someone else do that, where like you start to mash up words to demonstrate you're both excited and scared.
I'm loving the whole concept, but, and this is where my brain goes. Sure. And it's all about me. You know, you were talking about during the day, you know, you may start out and you're sort of content, and then you get some road rage, and then, you know, you see your grandchildren, so you're happy. What I then see is not, it's not faces. I see the road, like the physical road.
Yeah.
So this is my day. This is my morning, and it's this color. This is, you know.
I love that.
Okay. Well, I was thinking you got to get out of the construct, is that the right word?
Yeah.
Where there has to be some sort of thing that signifies the continuum or some, I don't know, I'm sort of talking off the top of my head here.
Well, no, so if I understood you right, what I love is that image, because it speaks to you, right? As you were describing it, what I saw in my mind's eye was a road with different colors, like my day is this whatever.
Continue.
17-hour road. I don't know how much sleep you get. Let's hope you get more than that. But yeah, maybe green, 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 then some red, then some, you know, whatever. I think that's a beautiful way, if that resonates with you. Like I, the minute you said it, I totally got it. I recognize I don't maybe process that way, but it makes so much sense. And what I love about this is it's your own symbols that make sense. Yes, you may find it really interesting, even dashes throughout the day, right? Carrie and I've just picked up the two pins, like, this is a green moment. This is a red moment, you know? I think people can really play with it. One of the reasons I like playing with it in the way you said is sometimes as these emotions or feelings are processing, we're just sort of stuffing them down and we're not paying a lot of attention. We're just going on autopilot. It's sort of fun to capture them because it brings us a little more into our bodies and present. So I really love your imagery. That's fantastic.
Well, it's funny because I was thinking that my journal's the one with on every page, there's a road, a multicolored road around the outside. And then all there's these stick people inside, depending on what I've done. It's like, okay.
No, that's fantastic. That's why I love to talk to people. Because that is totally original. I have not heard, I've taught this quite a bit and gotten a lot of things. But what I love is it speaks to you. And when I hear that, not that you would ever need to tell anyone, it's like, oh, how interesting, because there's this outer casing and then there's all the human sort of in it. I mean, it's got a lot of symbolism. It's really what I love about it, and using it as we're not coaching, right? You're interviewing me, but like using that as a tool and what that means and how you reflect on it. That's brilliant. Aren't you creative?
Well, it's nice of you to say that. Move over. I'm going to take over your job. No, I'm just kidding.
Well, I don't define that way, but I do love seeing how people process and think, yeah. Because what's so neat about what you did is you did it without drawing. Like you're thinking, we're talking, and you're picturing how would I represent a day and how would I represent the feelings in it. So I love the fact you shared that. Thank you.
No, thank you. What haven't I asked you that you want midlife women to consider?
So I'll share a story that came up in one of my workshops because it left me pondering. Lovely woman. I was teaching at a wellness retreat, a spa, and this was like a 45-minute introduction to art journaling, right? For resilience, for life transitions. Very similar to what we're talking about, but I'm doing exercise, right? They come in, they get two crayons. It's a 3-minute exercise. They just have to fill a piece of paper in 3 minutes while some music plays. Really simple. This lovely, lovely woman came up to me. She's got 3 grown kids. She'd been a dental hygienist, you know, lovely. And she came up and she goes, there were almost tears in her eyes. She goes, that was so fun. I realize I haven't done something in ages, maybe my adult life, with no rules. I've always been like following like good mother, good wife, good housekeeper, good, you know, professional in this sense, good deck, right? Whatever it was, that desire that we all have to be good, to do it right, to do the right thing. And she just said, I mean, her face, she's really friendly, lovely, energetic person, but it was like, there was so much awe. And it was like a light bulb went off on how much she's always looking for the right way to do something and how freeing this was. So what I would say for midlife women who are listening to this is create some space for really that free play. Because in many cases, I'm just going to say, it's like we'll carry the weight of the world on our shoulders and like all the plates and all the bows and how's the kids doing or grandkids or family, right? It's all the stuff. It is so liberating. And when I think of her face in particular and how lit up she was, just, it was 3 minutes. And it was just that, like, give yourself that. If you're curious on my website, I've got a free PDF to get you started, right? And just go download that. Or you can like even do this exercise. I mean, you've done a great job describing how you would process your day. I've talked about that exercise in the workshop. Like you can play now after, you know, having listened to this. I think we owe that to ourselves. It's just finding that play outlet of no rules, of expression that just feels good to us with no need to explain it to anyone else.
So it's not about finding a right way to do it. It's about knowing there's no wrong way to do it.
Absolutely. There is absolutely no wrong way. And it is really about having, I mean, it starts with fun. Just do it and have a little fun. Put on a song you love. Just do it for 3 minutes. Give yourself a little fun break versus maybe getting on social media or changing out laundry again, right? We can always sort of find things to do with a few extra minutes. And it's nice to come up with something else.
Very cool. Where do we find you on the World Wide Web?
Easiest place is just susan-hensley.com. Tends to pop up. The dash is important, but you'll find the website and books available everywhere. You buy books and the videos and courses all there. And the free PDF. Like I said, no need to spend any money, but if you're curious and you want a little bit of a guide, just download that.
Are you on social?
I am. I'm on Instagram and LinkedIn, but it tends to be easier to contact me, you know, via the website. There's a contact button.
Okay. Yeah. I've got your website up here and people usually have their social like all over the place.
Yeah. That's not as much me. I love being on podcasts and I definitely have an Instagram side and LinkedIn, but I don't do as much there. I really don't. It's not like follow me. I don't have the answers. You can work with me. You can do the training, but every day I'm not going to teach you how to art journal, right? You can do that. So I haven't done as much there.
Okay. Can I ask you a personal question before we close?
Yeah.
90 countries so far?
Yeah. Yeah. So I lived abroad twice. We lived in Hong Kong for several years, and I lived in London, which really helps to get to a lot of countries. But that's a really, really deep passion. I first went abroad in college many years ago and really travel whenever I can.
90 countries? Like, how do you decide? Like, you just get to one and then think, oh, the next one should be fun too?
Yeah. It's interesting because it really comes up in the art journal for me, there's something I feel when I go to these different cultures and different countries, really connected to humanity. I've thought, should I write about travel? Should I blog about travel? And that feels like I'd be trying to monetize it. It's a very personal experience. I love seeing how people live. I was just earlier this month, I went to a citizen science camp, really, really remote in the Amazon, at the border of sort of Peru and Bolivia, and did a couple science projects and, you know, like help trap bugs and listen to things. It's just, it's easy to get cynical about the world or worried about the world. And when you travel and you see all the ways people have to live, I think that keeps me really expansive. You know, you go to a really rural Peru and you see some of the indigenous people. There's a lot of ways to live that are not the way I've necessarily lived and grown up. And it's freeing. I love it. It's a deep passion that when I think, should I ever write or share more about it? It feels more personal, but I did write that there because and a lot of my art journal images end up having travel images. Actually, during the pandemic, the one thing that kept coming to the house were travel brochures. And I will tell you, if they ever make them or you get that if you want to do collage, get a travel magazine. I mean, beautiful pictures.
So I think we all know, if you've traveled even a bit, that certain cultures have their own style of art, but often their own colors that they draw onto because that's what's in their environment. Yeah. Do you find when you're art journaling, either in another country or when you've gotten back from another country, is any of that reflected in your art?
Oh, that's such an interesting question. So I do take a pack of crayons. I keep it really simple. And I'm talking 12 crayons. I'm not talking 64 crayons. I'm talking teeny pack. Cause I travel light. I would say when I'm there, like when I was in the jungle, definitely lots of greens and leaves and plants. And like it was, that section was very muddy. So I'll be sort of inspired. I don't try and capture things cause I don't have that artistic talent, but it's more my way. I don't know when I come back if I carry it over, but what I'm always struck, and it was a great question, is the different colors and the different color combinations. And here we can get very set on certain things go together, and then you realize, or I only wear certain colors because I wouldn't ever wear anything that bright, and you go places where people are wearing only bright colors, and you look sort of silly, or I look sort of silly, all in black, or, you know, all in beige. And what I love about it is you do notice the colors, and you notice, once again, all the different ways to live. It also makes you really, really grateful whenever I return, particularly where I was, for clean water, right? I mean, I also think I enjoy the travel because I take a lot for granted, which is normal and natural, right, for us too. But I think that's something else I really do love about travels. It's both expansive and makes me deeply, deeply grateful.
I asked about the color because it was the first thing my son noticed. He did months and months of travel down through Mexico, Central America, South America. And when he got back home, he just went, "Mom, everything's green, brown, blue, and occasionally sort of gold and yellow." And it was just, it was almost like, obviously, this is home. This is where he was raised and lived, yeah, and, you know, whatever he always comes back to. But it was almost a disappointment for him because there was so much vibrancy.
Yeah, definitely in those other cultures and those areas.
Yeah.
You know, that's really interesting. It is something I've noticed, but I haven't thought about in quite that same way.
Yeah. Okay. Your website link is in the show notes.
Oh, thank you.
I can either. Usually I say all of your links are on your page at our website, but if you don't want to use them, that's okay. Listeners, if you are in or soon to be in a transition, how are you feeling about that? Please talk to us. Leave comments where you're listening, or if you're listening at boomwithabang.com, scroll to the bottom of the page and talk to us there. Maybe there was a question I didn't ask Susan. Ask it in the comments and I'll get you an answer. And, you know, we're coming to a conclusion here, but I'm thinking I should at the very beginning in the intro say, go get a crayon and a piece of paper as you listen to Susan. And maybe I'll do that because I always create my own intro before this goes live. Share this episode. Most of our friends are at the same life stage we are. Susan's discussion might be the antidote they're looking for. Or art journaling might be something you could discover together. If you've enjoyed this conversation, click the follow button wherever you're listening, and that helps us grow. I'm also registered at Substack. Following there is free, and you get notified every time an episode is released. Susan Hensley, thank you for being my guest today and sharing that whole concept of art journaling with us. As I say, I came in going like, okay, what is art journaling?
No, so thank you. It's been great.
I really appreciate your introduction. And I thank everybody. I've got it right here. How do I try art journaling? Yeah, your quick start guide. Everybody should go download that. Have a great rest of week.